Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. Two vie for top law officer in Jeff Davis County. One wants to be a constitutional sheriff. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Jeff Davis County. Two experienced law enforcement officers will face off in a May 28th sheriff's race runoff for the Republican primary in Jeff Davis County. One contender, C.W. Stevens, is embracing a controversial philosophy of the constitutional sheriff movement, which is based in the belief that sheriffs are the ultimate authority in constitutional matters and can override state and federal directives and law. Stevens, a current deputy for the county, came in second in the March 5th primary behind Victor Lopez, a former Jeff Davis County deputy and current Marfa Police Department officer, who came out on top, 245-195. Since neither achieved more than 50% of the vote, they head to the runoff. But with no Democratic contender in November, the winner will assume the post in January. Current Sheriff Bill Kitts is retiring and did not seek re-election. The sheriff should be the primary conservator of the peace, Stevens said, and I also feel that where they can, the sheriff should try to protect the rights of the citizens in their jurisdiction. Our Constitution just seems to go out the window pretty much these days. Stevens defended his belief in constitutional sheriffs by saying he doesn't agree with recent criticism of the movement, with reports on many of these sheriffs refusing to acknowledge federal laws or even judges' rulings, with examples of citizens left vulnerable to civil rights violations or corrupt local officials. He sees the movement as just the opposite and wants to protect the rights of citizens and make sure that some other agency doesn't come in here and run roughshod over them. Lopez, who served as a Hudspeth County Sheriff Deputy for several years and 4 years in Jeff Davis County, now has the night shift on patrol in Marfa. When he decided to run for sheriff, he thought it would be best to take a position in Marfa during the campaign, especially since Deputy Stevens was running alongside him. I just thought it'd be better for me to run my campaign from the outside looking in, instead of from the inside looking out, Lopez said. Lopez said his 8 kids, ranging in age from 8 to 28, inspired him to get into law enforcement. He said a lot of the programs he's championed in the past in Hudspeth County focus on getting area kids and families engaged with law enforcement, such as Red Ribbon Week, which encourages youth to live a healthy, drug-free life, are missing in Jeff Davis County. I've always wanted to protect my kids and take care of other kids, take care of all their families, take care of them just the way that law enforcement takes care of my family while I'm gone, Lopez said. Lopez said he wants to be a sheriff who shows up at events and helps sponsor them, so that the department is more in step with the community. They don't do any of that at the schools now, Lopez said. The sheriff's department is not involved. He said he enjoys moments like his involvement with the Thin Blue Line Law Enforcement Motorcycle Club that raises money for scholarships, which he helped hand out in Marfa ISD last spring. When I was in Hudspeth County, one of the biggest things that I did was being a school resource officer, Lopez said, So I took care of all the Say No to Drugs programs and stuff like that. Lopez said in addition to being the school resource officer, who was responsible for active shooter drills, he also worked narcotic investigations and helped administratively in Hudspeth County, making him a well-rounded, experienced officer. Stevens said he also has extensive experience after starting in law enforcement in Matagorda and Brazoria counties, serving on special investigative units and a SWAT team, before falling in love with Jeff Davis County and joining the sheriff's department there. "I didn't have any political aspirations at all," he said of when he arrived. "I took a pay cut and ended up going from a 40-hour-a-week job to 60-plus. I noticed some things that I didn't think were the best way to run a sheriff's office and was hoping to make some changes. One thing is, I want to have an open-door policy," Stevens said. "Part of that is a lack of personnel problem, but there seems to be a barrier between the citizens and the sheriff's office, and I want to try to fix that and get the community more involved." He added that it wasn't just a metaphor for openness. "I've never actually seen a sheriff's office before where the front door was always locked, like it is in Fort Davis," he said. "Those goals will be more difficult if the deputies are overworked," he said. "I really believe we need a lot more deputies than what we have here. There's a sheriff, a chief deputy, and two street deputies right now. I'm one of them. And we're bigger than the state of Delaware." Stevens acknowledged that adding to the force would be tough for a county continually fighting budget deficits, but that he is ready to make the effort. Lopez agreed more deputies are needed to avoid burnout, adding deputies should not act as purely patrol officers. "It's hard to engage with the community when all you're doing is responding to calls," he said. Lopez downplayed the importance of Stephen's stance on constitutional sheriffs, but he noted how it did differentiate him from his opponent. "You know, I'll be honest with you, I'm not big on politics and stuff like that. The way I look at it is if you're a good sheriff, if you're a good person, and you're willing to do something good for the community, there's really no need to put labels on yourself." But Lopel also mentioned a community forum he attended where Stevens didn't give a good explanation of why he wanted the label. The Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA, is the primary organization serving the movement, and Texas has a large contingent of sheriffs, some 50 as of last year, according to the Texas Tribune reporting, that had participated in the association's training. Often, association members are tied to election denier groups, Second Amendment abolitionists refusing to follow any gun laws that may develop, anti-migrant organizations, and, on the border, militia groups. Many in the group espouse the idea of nullification or interposition, legal theories that previously centered on states having the right to nullify federal law, with a history of its use as far back as the Civil War and through the decades of desegregation and the Civil Rights Movement. That theory spread to a more local level with ideas of constitutional counties, with the sheriffs being the supreme elected officials at that level. With some in the CSPOA forming ties with white nationalists and those supporting former President Donald Trump's actions to try and stop President Joe Biden from assuming office, criticism has also painted the organization as a threat to democracy. Stevens said there will be bad apples in any organization, and his intent is only to preserve rights, not violate them. I just don't have any intention of violating the civil rights of citizens, he said. Both Lopez and Stevens pledged to be more open with the media, something they acknowledge local sheriffs aren't often keen to do. Stevens said he wants to send reports out on Facebook, as the Presidio and Brewster County sheriffs do, with a goal of getting the community more involved with events his office would hold. Stevens said news reports can add to public safety and be a conversation starter. I'd like to work with the media and with the citizens and hear their concerns, he said. A sheriff being able to talk to the media is very important to me, Lopez said, especially if it has to do with the community. He also plans to use social media in the effort and believes that criminal activity should be more publicized. I would like to know if there's a person that's taking stuff from the neighborhood, and if I see him out there walking around, I would like to know who it is and if he's walking around my neck of the woods, and maybe he's not supposed to be there, Lopez said. Marfa Saturday Market to open this weekend in new location. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa Saturday Market, now in its 18th year, is slated to open this Saturday, May 4th, from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. in its new location, the parking lot west of the Marfa Public Library on Oak Street. The market's season typically runs from April to November. Marfa City Council voted last week to approve the market's use of the lot, which is city property. The lot includes the library's book barn, two handicapped parking spaces, and covered parking utilized by Marfa Country Clinic, Prescription Shop Marfa, Big Sky Yoga, and library patrons. The market's move from the USO, or Marfa Visitor Center, pavilion to the parking lot comes after a conflict with the city over its venue rental policy at the facility, which last year caused the market to close 3 months early. Per city policy, if events are booked on Saturdays at the USO, the market cannot utilize the space. In a follow-up interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, Roan said the USO was made available to the market with the understanding rental bookings would still occur, but they chose to go with the parking lot option instead. The city is currently working on adding outdoor bathrooms to the USO so that the pavilion can act as a standalone rental space, which would have alleviated some of the market conflict in cases when only the building was rented out. Market vendor Bob Schwab, who also sits on the library's board of advisors, expressed gratitude to the city council and city administration for the use of the USO for several years. We're very grateful that we have had that. It's a perfect space, but it's not a great location. This is a less-than-perfect space, but a great location, Schwab said. He publicly apologized to City Manager Mandy Roan for previous statements he had made to her regarding the USO rental policy. He said he told her he thought it was a mistake when he should have said it was a decision that I disagreed with. Now the market will begin anew. Roan said the library board and staff were supportive of the initiative. Library Director Nikki Itner expressed her support for the market's move. We think it would be good for the library because it would bring attention to us on Saturdays, Itner said. We're grateful for it. Schwab said market organizers were grateful for the many people in the community who offered up their space for the vendors, but it was important that the city be involved in the market, and its new location may help raise funds for the library via the book barn. He said the market will continue to remain a valuable resource for both locals and visitors. This is a wonderful MARFA event that brings together lots of people from all over, Schwab said. We have vendors that come from Valentine, Presidio, certainly Alpine, Fort Davis. They sell some great things. In a follow-up interview with the Sentinel, Schwab said market organizers hope to clean up the parking lot, filling the enormous potholes under the covered parking area, and more. The plan is to put up signs and rope off the lot on Fridays. He said because the MARFA Country Clinic and prescription shop are closed on Saturdays, the market will not impact their clients. Big Sky Yoga does host morning exercise classes on Saturdays, but Schwab said he has been in contact with owner Monica Bernstein, who supports the market, and they will work to communicate with her clients about where else to park. The market is recommending people park on Oak Street or Highland Boulevard. The market also recommends patrons bring cash, as many vendors do not accept credit cards, and that all dogs be friendly and on leashes. Schwab told council members that market organizers have also been in contact with the city's Parks and Recreation Board, which is exploring adding a structure to the east end of Sunset Park, across the street from the library, that the market may eventually be held in. This moves us closer to what may be our final home, Schwab said. The MARFA Saturday Market is currently seeking vendors for this season. Vendors must live within 100 miles of MARFA and sell locally made or homegrown goods. No booth fees are charged. For more information or to sign up as a vendor, email marfasatmarket@gmail.com. Photo courtesy of Melinda Beeman. The MARFA Saturday Market, now in its 18th season, opens this weekend in an all-new location.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. Fort Stockton Rec League kicks off exciting season. Fort Stockton's young baseball and softball stars are back in action. The Recreation Department launched an impressive season these last 2 weeks, boasting 39 teams across 8 divisions. With 460 players, 39 head coaches, and 120 coaches, all volunteers, community support is fueling this thrilling season. The energy was electric at the Taylor and Schuster Field complexes as families and fans cheered on at the enthusiastic athletes on Taylor East. An exciting boys machine pitch baseball battle unfolded between the Rangers, coached by Uriel, and the Reds, coached by Mando. Fans witnessed thrilling hits and close calls on both teams showcase their developing skills. Meanwhile, the girls' 12 major softball division saw the Diamond Divas square off against the Pink Jays on Taylor West. The game was a showcase of pitching mastery and strategic base running, keeping the crowd on the edge of their seats. Schuster East showcased a thrilling boys minors baseball game where teamwork propelled the Cubs to a 15-1 victory over the Yankees. Cubs star Zaiden Calderon amazed the crowd with an inside-the-park homer, humbly stating it was a good hit. With 5 years of travel team experience under his belt, Coach Justin Contreras praised Calderon's baseball smarts and leadership, helping his team maintain a perfect 3-0 record. This season promises plenty of exciting matchups and rising stars. Be sure to catch the action at your local fields and support Fort Stockton's next generation of athletes. Want to keep track of the latest standings, schedules, and scores? Visit Fort Stockton Rec League website at allprosoftware.net/2024_LittleLeague_schedules/default.htm. Boquilla's Port of Entry begins summer schedule April 28th. the Boquias Port of Entry within Big Bend National Park, providing access to the town of Boquias, Coahuila, Mexico, will change to summer schedule beginning Sunday, April 28th. Starting Friday, May 3rd, the crossing will be open 4 days a week, Friday through Monday. Summer hours of operation are pedestrians will be able to access the port between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Closed Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Note that clocks in the Mexican state of Coahuila are not adjusted for daylight savings time and will display 1 hour behind the port of entry. At the port of entry, visitors will be able to cross into Mexico by foot or by rowboat during business hours only. This port of entry does not accommodate vehicle crossings or commercial importation of products. There is no other legal access to Mexico within or through Big Bend National Park. Proper documentation is required to cross. U.S. and Canadian citizens can cross with a valid passport. For complete information on other accepted travel documents, contact U.S. Customs and Border Protection at Presidio 432-229-3349. The Boquias Port of Entry is operated cooperatively by the National Park Service and the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. The facility is staffed by National Park Rangers who can assist travelers with information about visiting the area. State Resource Fair held by Senator Blanco. Recently, Texas State Senator Cesar Blanco hosted a state resource fair in Fort Stockton in an effort to bring essential state services to rural communities. Blanco's goal was to bridge the gap between rural Far West Texas and the state government. The state agencies that attended the resource fair included Texas Health and Human Services, the Texas Veterans Commission, the Texas Department of Public Safety, and the Area Agency on Aging. Senator Blanco commented on the event, stating the vastness of our state can sometimes create barriers to accessing essential services, leaving many feeling isolated and overlooked. And for far too long, rural families have felt disconnected from the resources and opportunities available to their urban counterparts. Having access to essential services is a fundamental right that every Texan deserves, no matter the zip code. He went on to say this event allowed us to bring our state government to the people of Far West Texas. I'm grateful our office can host events like this to bring our state government to the people of West Texas and help families receive free vaccinations, set up license and ID renewals with DPS, or receive information on Medicaid, SNAP, and other state resources. By ensuring that our rural communities have equitable access to these resources, we not only empower each other, but also strengthen the entire state's economic social fabric. With this goal in mind, I'm happy to share the opening of our new district office located at the A&M AgriLife Extension Building in Fort Stockton. This addition will facilitate better service for those in our rural areas. When rural Texas thrives, all of Texas does too. For further information, contact Taylor Sanchez at 915-276-3872 or taylor.sanchez@senate.texas.gov. Election Day is May 4th. May 4th is General Election Day in Pecos County. Depending on what precinct or ward you fall under, you still have time to vote. On the ballot this election cycle are 2 Fort Stockton Independent School District Board of Trustees seats, 2 Pecos County Hospital District seats, 2 Pecos County Water Improvement District seats, and the Red Bluff Water Control Power District. In the Fort Stockton ISD Board of Trustees general election, Ward 4 is unopposed and Flo Garcia will remain on the board. Ward 6 is a contested race with Ursula M. Sanchez as the incumbent running against Gabriel Armendariz. Election Day voting will be at the Pecos County Annex, 200 South Nelson in Fort Stockton. In the Pecos County Hospital District, District Director Precinct 4 is Santiago Cantu Jr. versus Deborah Teich. In Precinct 2, Luann Tovar will run unopposed. Election Day, May 4th, voting for Precinct 2 and Precinct 4 may cast their votes at the Pecos County Annex, the Imperial Community Center, and the Kyanosa Community Center, located in Kyanosa. In the Pecos County Water District Board of Directors search, residents in that district have the option to vote for none, one, two, three, four, or five candidates on the ballot, including Delane Cagle, Gary Bryant, Ernest Woodward, Angela Angel, Michael McCulloch, Kathleen McCulloch, Ronald Cooper, and Kelly Duncan Garrett. Election Day will be held at the Imperial Community Center. The Red Bluff Water Control Power District Board of Directors seat will be Shiler Wright versus Clarence Stephan. On Election Day, May 4th, residents will vote at the Imperial Community Center in Imperial. Groundwater District denies petition. The Middle Pecos Groundwater Conservation District Board met at their regular meeting on April 16th. The quorum was met with only one board member absent. Present were Jerry McGuart, Janet Groth, M.R. Gonzalez, Puja Buenpali, Weldon Blackwelder, Alvaro Mondujano, Ronald Cooper, Vanessa Caldwell, Jeff Sims, and Alan Childs. There were multiple attendees connected via Zoom call. After the minutes of the regular meetings on March 18th were approved, the board reviewed and approved the treasurer's report, which ended on March 31st. The next agenda item was to consider and or act upon an explanation for denial of the petition to adopt or modify a district rule submitted by Cockrell Investment Partners. The board denied the request to adopt or modify the district rule on March 18th and moved to approve documentation provided by Mondujano that explains the reasons for the denial. Portions of the requested rule change include more metering and measurement of water levels, installation of tremi pipes in all new wells, additional transducers, and new reporting requirements. Ty Edwards then provided an update on the San Andreas efforts at the Railroad Commission and Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Edwards provided an update on Fort Stockton Holdings joint study on the implementation and threshold water level. The last agenda item included a briefing on five lawsuits. Edwards provided information on well registrations with a count of 3,884 wells in the district. He provided an update to the board on production permits, drilling permits, data loggers, drought monitor maps, and water quality analysis. Hearing a lot about hydrogen plants, he probably had four or five people come in here telling us they're hearing all about hydrogen, and it's all over the state, not just Pecos County. It's going to be a big thing for our country, more than likely, but it's going to be a lot of government subsidies, kind of like the wind thing, where they take the groundwater, they run it through the electrolysis process, and they make hydrogen. After these agenda items, President McQuart requested a motion to adjourn, and the motion was seconded and approved. The next meeting is scheduled for May 21st. Dear Editor, it's that time of year again. Water Carnival Season. The Water Carnival Association Board works nearly all year. The call for scripts happens early in the year. There are many working parts to the Carnival Board of Directors. It's a board of volunteers. Water Carnival doesn't happen without the work of the volunteers. There seems to be a disturbing trend in recent years. The lack of volunteerism in this community is astounding. The lack of volunteerism is not just a Water Carnival trend. It happens to many organizations in town. I've seen this community show up and show out for people who have experienced one tragic loss and the love and pride for this community when we celebrate. Show your love and pride for volunteering. I'm not saying there aren't great volunteers who work every year to make Water Carnival a success. There are. They are just the same ones over and over. Truthfully, some of those volunteers are getting up in age, and it wears on them. Water Carnival needs some young, newer blood, so to speak, so step up. Yes, it takes blood, sweat, and sometimes tears to make it happen. Those who are willing and able to keep this time-honored tradition alive. 100-plus years of tradition. In my opinion, the prop crew has one of the biggest jobs and the most opportunity for volunteerism. Their creativity, along with the vision of the show's director and acting directors, brings the show to life. This year, the Water Carnival is offering one boy and one girl, juniors and seniors, a $500 scholarship for 50-plus hours of volunteering. This is something I've never seen the Water Carnival Association offer in the 15 years I've lived here. That should say something about how much they need the help. This only applies to prop crew help, not pageant participants. They have a separate scholarship. As per usual, high school kids can receive Texas Scholar hours for them volunteering their time. If you would like to volunteer, please contact the president of the Water Carnival Board, Rankin Mitchell, at 290-6302. You can also call Natalie Kincaid at 719-331-3713. Sincerely, Natalie Kincaid, Fort Stockton. Dear Editor, there was a time of joyful people who came and went from both sides. They crossed the Rio as they pleased, no longer. Now the Rio cries. The crossings are like jungles with danger, deceit, and lies. People suffer and many times die. Much sadness, so the Rio cries. They want free Yankee dollars will be mostly the reasons why. They live for it and die for it. The almighty it is why the Rio cries. Many live in anger and frustration. Evil players profit as days go by. Others couldn't care less about it. How much longer must the Rio cry? Since January of 2021, many millions of illegal migrants crossed the open U.S. borders. With them came a flood of illegal drugs. Thousands of Americans die each year from these drugs, and many U.S. politicians don't seem to care. There was a time when outlaws threatened Americans, like cartels do now, who made the mistake of crossing the Rio Grande to attack New Mexico. Thousands of U.S. troops were sent to Mexico, which put an end to it. So why isn't this much worse state of affairs not being handled in the same way? Very much like the Mexican federales, the U.S. federal government can only be seen as pathetically corrupt. Signed, James LeBlanc, Fort Davis.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, April 25th. Ribbon cutting held at ballparks Monday. Grand opening slated Saturday. A ribbon cutting was held on Monday, April 22nd, at the newly renovated Monahans baseball and softball parks, which have recently gone under a complete transformation. Ward County Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms cut the ceremonial ribbon with members of the Midland Ambassadors Club and Miss Monahans Charisma Carrasco in attendance. The ballpark renovations consist of four fields, girls, boys, t-ball, and a designated coaching pitching field, concession stands, restrooms, covered bleachers, play area for little kids, and massive amounts of concrete walk areas for disabled visitors. The t-ball field has all the same amenities as the big fields and is surrounded by concrete, so spectators will be able to set up lawn chairs around the fence to watch the games. Along with the ribbon cutting, a Super Saturday activities will be held April 27th, beginning at 9 a.m. on field number 2, with a grand opening ceremony and introduction of all teams. Games and prizes activities will be taking place all day. At 7:30 p.m., a home run derby under the lights will be held on park number 2 for boys and girls, majors and minors. There will be rings for first-place winners. New canine officer joins sheriff's office. The story was written by Jan Crenfield, staff writer. In the Monday morning Ward County Commissioners meeting, the commissioners approved the deputation of the Ward County Sheriff's Officer, new canine officer, Voldemort. Voldemort is a 3-year-old German Shepherd who was born in Germany and received some of his training there before coming to Monahans. Voldemort has been in training for the past year and continues to be trained in narcotics, searching, apprehension, and protection. Quote, Voldemort is unique in an unusual way. He has titanium caps on his canine incisors. When he was young, he kept picking up bricks and carrying them around. The trainers were afraid he was going to ruin his teeth, so they had them capped with titanium. He really has a sparkling smile, Voldemort's handler, Deputy Tommy Acosta, said. In other business, the commissioners approved hiring someone to work part-time cleaning the library. The job will be for approximately 8 hours a week at $15 per hour. Quote, the ladies at the library do a good job of taking care of things, but having someone to do the cleaning would help them tremendously. That is a big building to take care of on top of their jobs. Help would be good, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols said. The commissioners also gave approval to renewing 4 hospital board managers' service terms. Those whose terms were renewed were John Fawcett, Boyd Barron, who filled the unexpired term of Larry Hunt, Angel Fuentes, and Gerald Carlson. Quote, I talked with each of the board members, and they were all agreeable to serving another term on the Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers, Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. Other items that were on the meeting agenda and approved by the court were approving the last meeting's minutes, approving budget amendments, they approved paying the county bills, the officers' reports, treasurer's reports, and hospital financial report. Present for the meeting were Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Judge Greg Holly. Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez was not present for the meeting. The next scheduled commissioners' meeting will be Monday, May 13th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Council takes note of properties in violation of city code. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. In a meeting which lasted just over 9 minutes, the Monahans City Council met in regular session and, after establishing a quorum, approved the minutes of the April 9th regular meeting. Council members quickly got to work and approved a resolution from the city code enforcement regarding 10 properties in violation of city code for either trash, weeds, items in the alleyway, and/or dangerous structures. Quote, this process is working. We started out with about 16 on the list, but several owners have complied since then, and the list is down to 10 now, City Manager Rex Thee said. The properties have all been given a first notice and did not comply, so this will allow code enforcement to follow up with a final notice and possibly move forward with court action if needed. Those reported to be still in violation are 1013 North Doris, owned by Philip and Celeste Stone, 1300 South Calvin, owned by Ruben and Amy Martinez, 1514 South Betty, owned by Norman and Carolyn Samples, 700 South James, owned by First Pecos, attention John Conley, 707 South Gary, owned by Arlena Moore, 1209 South Allen, owned by Roy D. Bean, 1608 South James, owned by Joe Martinez, 1509 South Allen, owned by Dorothy Nell Milam, 607 North Allen, owned by Maria Valle Perez, and 400 West A Street, owned by E. P. Bryce. Once a second notice is issued, the property owner has 10 days to comply, or the case could be turned over to Monahans Municipal Court for further action. The remainder of the meeting entailed the council approving a request from First Baptist Church to close 6th Street between Alice and Betty Streets from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on May 5th for the 4th Annual Pinewood Derby and Classic Car Show, and approving two oil well drilling applications from Halcon Operating Company on the Seeley Ranch in the Hog Well Field. In other business, the quarterly investment report was also approved. The report reflects the total amount in the investment portfolio is $20,715,000. The nine funds listed on the report are the Disbursement Fund, Water Meter Deposit, Police State Asset Account, Hotel Motel Tax Fund, Fireman's Relief and Retirement Fund, and the Monahans Economic Development Fund, MEDC Broadband Additional Funds, MEDC Broadband Grant Match Contributions, and Coronavirus Recovery Fund. In routine business, the March accounts payable in the amount of $754,000 was approved unanimously. Aside from usual expenses, leading items were $13,800 to Deere and Company, AG and Turf, for a John Deere Gator, $57,000 to Silsby Ford for a Ford F-250 Super Duty truck, and $15,000 to Aldridge Gardens for turf and edging at the new fitness court. Monthly department reports from the airport manager, MEDC minutes and financials, building inspector, animal control, municipal court, and the Chamber of Commerce Hotel Motel occupancy report. Minutes of the April 9th meeting were also approved. Along with the council members present for the meeting were Jeppy Wilson, Calvin Carroll, Richard Hawkins, Ivy Valenzuela, and Mayor Adam Steen. Member Gerald Stava and City Attorney Justin Till were both absent. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The next City Council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, May 14th, in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Early voting underway for District 6 trustee seat. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Early voting for the Monahans Wicked Pyote ISD District 6 trustee position began Monday, April 22nd, as voters will have until Tuesday, April 30th, to cast their ballot ahead of Election Day, which is May 4th. As of Tuesday, a total of 7 mail-in ballots and 36 early voters reported to the polls. Early voting hours are from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Election Day voting hours will be Saturday, May 4th, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the School Administration Building located at 606 South Betty Street. This year, the district had two trustee positions up for re-election, District 6 and 7. Josh Schwab currently occupies District 7, and Nancy Upchurch represents District 6. Along with incumbent Upchurch, Krista Powell and Christian DeAnda are also running for the school board seat. The District 7 seat drew no competitors and was subsequently canceled during the March 18th school board meeting. Harmony Home to host Party in the Park. Harmony Home will cap off Child Abuse Awareness Month this Saturday with their annual Party in the Park, held at Hill Park from 1 to 4 p.m. This is a free community event with food, games, music, and resource tables from agencies in the community, and a fun day that brings awareness to the prevention of child abuse in the Permian Basin. Harmony Home has been an advocacy center for abused children since 1993 and is one of 72 in Texas and works with children who have been physically, sexually, or emotionally abused, as well as all the agencies, law enforcement, child protective services, CASA, hospitals, county and district attorney's offices involved with an investigation. MEDC selects new engineer for commercial development. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Monday, the Monahans Economic Development Board members approved a scope of work agreement with a new engineering firm. The board has been actively seeking for an engineering company to replace former company Maverick Engineering. Board members received three proposals for engineering services from Park Hill, Newton Engineering, and Skyline Civil Group. Skyline Civil Group came in with the lowest cost at $58,000. Park Hill was the highest at $119,000, and Newton Engineering was slightly lower than Park Hill at $109,000. The board approved the proposal from Newton Engineering, which will be tasked with engineering a plan for 12-acre commercial tract of land, Block 25, in the East Monahan subdivision. In bid tabulations, the board approved awarding bid for Project 2024-001, Block 26 development. MEDC received two bids back from Rubio's Paving and Brett Construction. The bid was awarded to Rubio's in the amount of $813,000 and will consist of utility improvements, paving, and drainage improvements. Construction on the land had been at a standstill for over a year while the board waited on an easement agreement with Car Wash 828. In final matters, the board approved a final agreement for the buyback for Block 27 for $280,000 from SAI Brothers. In February, the board voted to offer SAI Brothers $268,000 for the property, which is 80% of the purchase price less attorney's fees. Because it was not accepted within 3 days of the offer being submitted, the board agreed to offer the full 80%, $280,000. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable totaling $30,000, which included $6,800 for payroll and salaries, and $12,000 to Sandhills Plaza for the Block 27 shared driveway reimbursement, and $49 to Ward County for the Car Wash 828 shared easement filing. The financial report, reflecting a balance of $3.5 million in available funds as of March 31st, and minutes of the March 18th meeting were approved. WMH to purchase portable office building. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers met at 6:15 p.m. Thursday evening for a regularly scheduled bi-monthly meeting. During the short meeting, the managers voted to approve the purchase of a portable office building. The building will be erected behind the Sandhills Clinic under the back carport and will house the clinic's current offices, which will allow room for two exam rooms and two treatment rooms. The work will be done by Saul Building Contractors, LLC, out of Midland. The cost of the clinic expansion will come in at $25,000 based upon a March 5th submitted bid. In other regular business, the board approved paying the accounts payable, consisting of Thursday's bills in the amount of $50,000, payroll deductions for $182, Ward County payroll fund totaling $371,000, Empower or Employee Retirement $5,000, Texas County and District Retirement System amounting to $205,000, and Monday's bills totaling $427,000. There were no visitors to address the board, no personnel hires, no credentialing. The board approved the last meeting's minutes and excused absent board managers Gerald Carlson and Jeff Burdick. A brief medical surgical renovations update was given by Monahans Memorial Hospital Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez. Quote, "The roof is 75% completed, 98% of the framing is done, as well as 50% of the HVAC system is complete. Due to the weather and holiday back in December, we are still about 4 to 5 weeks behind schedule," Rodriguez said. The hospital received a good rating on their security assessment, which was performed in a recent visit by Rod Troutman, a private assessment firm that performs the hospital's security and compliance checks on a periodical basis. The board entered executive session at approximately 6:55 p.m. to discuss the hospital's compliance with Medicare standard requirements to remain accredited by Medicare. Any board discussions involving patient care must be conducted in private. The board discussed setting up a quarterly report system to be sure MMH is meeting Medicare requirements. The board then reconvened an open meeting to consider the information discussed in executive meeting by approving a quarterly review to assure the Medicare standards are being met by the hospital in order to keep accreditation. Present for the meeting were board managers Lisa Stewart, Frank Heslin, Angel Fuentes, John Fawcett, Mickey Mitchell, Boyd Barron, and MMH Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez. The hospital board meets every first and third Thursday of the month at 6:15 p.m. Anyone who would like to address the board about any concerns needs to contact Rodriguez at 943-2511 extension 176 to explain their concern and ask to be placed on the next board meeting agenda. The next meeting will be May 9th at 6:15 p.m. at the Physical Therapy Boardroom, 420 South Ike Street. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Monahans News on Thursday, April 25th. Robert Wayne Walker, age 75, of Monahans, passed away on April 15th. Walker was born in Fairfield, Alabama, to Mamie Allgood Walker and W.D. Walker on February 27, 1949. Robert grew up in Lipscomb, Alabama. He graduated from high school in Birmingham, Alabama in 1967. After briefly attending Auburn University, Robert served in the U.S. Navy from 1969 to 1978. He attended Tyler Junior College before working as a safety and environmental coordinator in the oil and gas industry. Robert eventually returned to college, earning a BA in psychology from University of Texas Permian Basin with a 4.0 GPA. Robert is preceded in death by his parents, Tootsie and W.D. Walker. Robert is survived by his wife of 49 years, Sina Malone Walker, his daughter, Tammy Walker Godwin, son, Robert Robbie Walker, granddaughter, Sway Godwin, sisters, Margaret Nivens and Nell Wilson, and many beloved family members. The family has foregone services in keeping with the wishes of the deceased. Visit our website, harkeyfunerals.com, to sign the guest book or leave a personal note to the family. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home. Herbert Reed Johnson, born on September 22, 1942, in Mountain Pine, Arkansas, peacefully passed away on April 16th in Sugar Land. Herbert, a skilled commercial carpenter in the construction industry, devoted his life to his craft. Having attended school in Monahans before completing his education in Oklahoma, Herbert eventually settled in Seattle, Washington, where he spent over 50 vibrant years. Herbert was preceded in death by his parents, Eldridge and Lula Johnson. He is survived by his loving daughter, Alyssa Gans, and son-in-law, Franklin Gans, Jr., two grandsons, Franklin Trey Gans III and Timothy Reed Gans, two sisters, Hazel Lofton and Pearlie Washington, both of Seattle, Washington. A small viewing was held on Tuesday, April 23rd at Harkey Funeral Home. A graveside service to honor and remember Herbert took place at Monahans Memorial Cemetery on Tuesday, April 23rd, with Pastor Jeppy Wilson officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to Harkey Funeral Home. If you would like to send your condolences to the family, you may do so by signing the guest book at www.harkeyfunerals.com.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.